There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. Career Connect.
Now, two guests with us. Very nice to see Stuart Walker, who is a partner at Afridi and Angel Legal Consultants. Stuart, welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And also David McKenzie, who's MD at McKenzie Jones. David, good to have you here. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you again.
So look, this comes from, is this a blog that you've written?
It's a work in progress, like okay. Most things. Yeah, so it was driven from what candidates are saying to us these days, because it's a really tough job market. Yeah. So I can give you a précis of it later on if you like, or now if you want.
Well, I tell you what, I'm interested in this because the topic of your blog is essentially the rise of the realist. So I would gather from that your advice is if you are interviewing for a prospective position at the moment, you need to go in and be pretty clear with what you want and be realistic.
Yeah, I think the days of the big packages, schooling and housing are declining. And I think we have lots of candidates coming into us saying, well, I was on this 4 years ago and now I want this and it's not happening anymore. So you have to be very realistic and clients are aware of it now.
Okay, so when you say realistic, what do you need to be most realistic about? Is it that you don't want to go in and ask for outlandish educational supplements or allowances so you can rent a nice villa in a highfalutin place, for example?
What, where the things are falling
somewhere
apart?
Somewhere where, maybe underground water tanks explode.
Natalie, you live in a really nice place, don't you?
That's okay. Moving on.
Yeah, don't go to where I live. I think you need to be realistic about a number of things. One is about your expectations of the job, because the jobs these days are becoming more focused or narrow to a degree. Mm-hmm. Salary and benefits package, without a doubt, but also your expectations of what you can achieve in your career now. I think when I came 10 years ago, you could come here and you could be promoted within 6 months and it was a massive job, but we've become a more realistic market and hence you don't need to pay things like housing because housing is coming down. I know that's a very interesting point because some people argue the housing's still expensive, but it is getting more normalised now.
But okay. Do you think that's because it's matured? It's now become a place that people are settling in for a longer period of time. When there was such a high turnover of people, It was easier to attract people with packages and all the extra benefits that came along with it.
Yeah, I think limited contracts and things like that are starting to disappear. And it's more about you come here for 10 years. You know, Stuart's been here since the dawning of time. I think he was the first man in Dubai.
Were you? Not quite. Three or four, I think.
But what are you seeing, Stuart? What do you think? Look at the job market, first of all. What's your experience? Your perspective, I guess, is slightly different. You're looking at legal issues, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's quite a variation between different industries. So, traditionally, banking, finance would give very generous, big, well-padded contracts, and other industries maybe not as much. But what we're seeing when we're asked to draw up employment contracts is more and more people going to a sort of straightforward total compensation model.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where it's like, we're going to pay you X amount per month, do with it what you like, and we're not going to get into what your housing allowance is and whether we give you a car or schooling or anything like that.
Okay, and you're seeing more and more of that.
Yeah, I think Stuart's hit the nail on the head. That's what people are doing. They're giving so companies can be more stringent about how they're budgeting. There are less intangibles, and it's more about you can do what you want with it. It's more about flexible package, basically, to suit the candidate or the job seeker.
But sure, is there benefits to the employee in taking a contract like that, where it's all one lump sum? I guess at the end of the contract, that could work in your favour if you're paid one amount and that includes everything.
Well, this is the point on gratuity calculation, which is calculated on basic pay, not on the sum total of all your allowances. Now, there has been a habit in some companies of artificially reducing their gratuity obligations by saying to someone, I'm going to pay you $10,000 a month, $5,000 of it is basic, and $5,000 is what we'll call allowances, but I'm just giving you cash. Now, if you're new to the country, you might not understand what that means in terms of your final gratuity obligation, but the company has just reduced their bill there by 50%, which seems unjust in some circumstances.
But I mean, by the letter of the law, the regulation, I mean, you're perfectly limited to do so, aren't you?
Yeah, that's fine legally, yeah.
However you slice things up, I suppose. So candidates need, David, to be more realistic mm-hmm. about the position that they hope to attain regarding salaries. Moves now are judged on the type of role and often if it's low risk.
Yeah, we've seen a real a stability thing. People want to go to companies where they see it being stable for the next 4 or 5 years, I think. There's lots of startups here, loads and loads of startups. Mm. So we're still getting that part. That's a big part of our business with, you know, some of our business like Simply Digital, because it's a digital company. But if you look at the Mackenzie Jones business, we're getting people going, I want a business that's a multinational. I can grow in that company and stay a long time. Now, I think that's indicative of the people coming to the Middle East now. They don't want to come here just to do 2 or 3 years and move out. They want to come here for a career move. And I think that's the difference.
Is that a big change, do you think?
Yeah, I think last 5 years there's been a sea change in the amount of people coming here, and we're seeing more people who are probably slightly older in their careers who want that last push, you know, that last bit where they can try something different. We've just hired a lady into our HR team. She's, can I say this on air, she's the wrong side of 30, the wrong side of 40, actually, a bit like me.
You can say whatever you like. Yeah. Somebody will text you.
Yeah, exactly. It'll probably be her, actually. And she's brilliant. But she said, look, I had a really good career in UK. I want to try something different, but I want to be here 5 or 6 years. And she's that mentality. She will be here 5 or 6 years. And she'll probably, hopefully, stay with us for 5 or 6 years, okay, rather than move every 2 years, which is the norm in Dubai.
More competition from lower cost salary countries, Andy texts in. I mean, Dubai is more and more on the radar internationally, I suppose. Yeah. People look at Dubai and think, hold on a minute, I like the look of that, the sunshine, the lifestyle seems to be what I'm after. And that's going to happen, isn't it? It's not necessarily lower cost salary countries, whatever they may be. There is simply more competition.
Well, if you look at the housing market, you look up near myself and Natalie, where we live in that lovely estate, there are loads of...
Are you neighbours? What's going on? I'm
no,
lost.
She lives in the place I used to live, which I love, and I'm living in a place that I don't love anymore, so I'm a bit bitter. But anyway, so
going, not the same house.
No, we don't live together.
I'm not so sure.
Right, I just let me get back on this. So there's loads of housing going up near me, and it's all what we call mid-cost housing, and it's aimed at people that can't afford 250,000 dirhams for a 3-bedroom house. And they're much more realistic, like Mira up there, the Emaar development, Nasheed. So I think the whole market's catering for a more cost-effective person coming here. Not lower salaries, just they're more cost-effective about their salaries and what they spend it on.
That's a tight market, and it's a hard time. That's
we're
a good
maturing.
Thing.
We're maturing as a country.
Well, speak for yourself. I'm not absolutely sure about that. David McKenzie is here from Mackenzie Jones. Very He's true. The MD, our HR expert today. Stuart Walker's here from Afridi & Angel Legal Consultants. Stuart's a partner at the firm. If you have, and there are some questions in here, so we'll come to you in a moment, Stuart, with some legal problems that people are having, or they need a perspective, but get in touch with us. Feel free to ask questions or get involved in this conversation, 4001 via the free app. For no money, you can text or call on 423 1010.
This is Drive Live
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Drive Live on Career Connect today. Two guests, Stuart Walker is our legal expert from Afridi & Angel, and David McKenzie, MD at Mackenzie Jones. The topic is being realistic, essentially, when you're looking for work.
Yeah, I think realism is something I'm really a strong supporter of, isn't it, Tim? I think people need to be realistic, manage their expectations, and just get on with it.
What are you trying to say?
Nothing. I'm only looking at you because I'm talking to you.
That was heavily against you there, Tim. What have you done?
Nothing.
I don't know.
I'm just a realist. I strongly support this topic.
Yeah, but I think that the problem is Dubai in 10, 15 years ago was a utopian paradise where people came and it was about pioneering to a degree. And now it's become a normalised place to live. And I think people need to tailor their expectations a bit.
It's established. Mm. You know, you talk to people, whether they've been here for 2 years, 4 years, 10 years, 20 years, and everybody says, oh, well, when I first came, it was different. And that's just how a country progresses. Of course it will change. Of course the opportunities will change. Yeah. As the economy develops, there's more competition.
But it wasn't necessarily better 10 years ago. It was more difficult getting stuff done. Now, I actually quite like it now.
What was it like 10 years ago then? What did you think 10 years ago? But there is a perception. I mean, the outside perception is that it's, if you're expatriate, for many people working a Monday to Friday, you're expected to be available on the Friday, which in theory is a day off here, and it's, well, you're in the sun, it's like you're on holiday. It isn't like that. It's not as though people here are working any less. It's not as though the hours are any different. I would argue for a lot of people that the hours are longer.
True.
In some European countries, for example.
I do think, generally, if I look at the work ethic here, people tend to be more available. You know, they'll pick up their phones and they're more on WhatsApp. And certainly in my business, in recruitment, people WhatsApp you all hours and they'll call you all hours. So there is a sense of more available. But I think, look, I think that Dubai is maturing, the workplace is maturing, and it's getting easier to live here. I think there are certain things that need to change, and they will do as time goes on. Costs, you know, will keep going up, and I think people will always, and I talk to candidates now, and I feel really sorry for them, because there's lots of people out of work at the moment that can't afford to stay here, and that's the heartbreaking thing, that there's nothing to keep them here, so they're leaving and they will never come back again.
The visa being linked to your employment is the problem. It's not as if, even if you had the funds to stay here, there's not a period of time you can take to do that for most people.
And I think that's a great idea in terms of, it's the perfect immigration model, isn't it? You have to pay for yourself being here. But I think as we mature as a country, we need to look at things like that to keep people here so that they can continue their careers here and their lives here.
Children in school, etc., etc. Stuart, you've been here apparently since the dawn of time.
How long have you
since
been here?
Since 2003, 14
Look
years,
at that.
So. Okay, so you have some experience. What would you say the difference is from a position of the job market then to the position now that you're seeing?
I think, you know, these themes of the overall economy being more mature, more diverse, people coming here wanting to be established and stay here and have an expectation that they might move jobs relatively easily. That's all changed. Back when I came out, you know, the expectation was that you might come out on a 3-year contract with one particular employer and then probably return to your home country. Or maybe roll on with the same employer. But changing jobs was difficult then.
We've had quite a few texts in already. So if you do have a text, do get them in early. It's 4001 on free messaging app. If I can just start with this one for you, Stuart. It's from Ainoa, and she says, my employment contract with Jebel Ali Free Zone only includes my gross salary. Last year, I was asked to sign a letter where my salary was split between housing, transport and salary. Will this letter be enforceable at the time of calculating my end of service gratuity? So we touched on this, but she's saying, look, the contract was changed last year. How will the split look at the end?
Well, unfortunately, I think they'll say, okay, you've signed this agreeing to the split, so we'll calculate your gratuity simply on the what is now the basic, which is going to reduce her gratuity. And I can see why she would be disappointed in that. She could make the argument that this is just a technique that the company is using to artificially reduce her gratuity, but I don't know how far she'd get with that.
Here's another question for you. This is from Ashraf, and it's, I suppose, more for you, David. What's a fair expectation in package in today's economic conditions? I'm mid-senior sales, automotive industry. Got an offer of 5% better. I asked for 10%, 12%. Is that reasonable, Ashraf is asking?
I don't think it's unreasonable. It depends on the job. It depends on how niche you are in your specialism, because the more specialist you are, the more you can ask for to a degree. But we're getting, the average increase at the moment is about between 5 and 10%, if that. We are getting lots of people moving for parity.
But what you've also said in your advice, though, is don't move for money. Do not let that be the only motivating factor in changing jobs.
No. The whole thing about now is look at the job, and is it the job you really want to enjoy and you really want to do? And then look at the package. I mean, I had a very interesting conversation with a client the other day, and she said, we're going to offer your candidate 10% less. And I said, why? Because we're going to give her inbuilt promotion. So in 6 months' time, if she achieves these results, she will become the director of the business, and we will put that in writing. I put it to the candidate, and the candidate said, perfect, I'll take it. Because she wants to work for the company. The job package, the pay grades weren't paying enough, so they've given her an inbuilt promotion. So, and they've got it in writing. So I kind of like that.
Do you see that a lot? I mean, that strikes me as, I, that's It's gotta be rare, hasn't it?
It's becoming more common now, where people are not offering the, you know, back in the day, you know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago when I first came here, we were getting 40-50% pay increases of people who've been here 18 months. Now I think the norm is between Tim's looking at, did you not get that at ARN, Tim?
Never got that memo, let me tell
so,
you.
So I think the, sorry, excuse me, the packages now are more like 5, 10, 15 maximum percent increase. People are moving now for more realistic roles that they actually want to do and they'll enjoy, and it's a company they want to work for.
Okay.
We've got quite a few texts in. There's another one for you, Stuart. This one is a legal question. So she says, a colleague who's moved from spouse sponsorship to company sponsorship in Abu Dhabi is being made to travel to Trivandrum in Kerala to get an employment visa. What is the new rule and when did it come into effect? I recall it being announced sometime this year, but only for blue collar workers. When did it extend to everyone else?
Which rule in particular? Sorry, I'm not.
I think it's the fact that moving from spouse sponsorship to company sponsorship, that they're having to go back to India to get an employment visa again. That seems to be the issue.
To have the visa process, they have to leave the country to come back in.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, yeah, that's an immigration policy issue. It's not a change in the labour law.
You can do an in-country visa, yeah, though, can't you?
And normally you pay a small supplement to achieve that.
There would be a fee for that, but you should be able to, let's say, 30 days or...
Yeah, I mean, again, immigration policy varies with the nationality of the individual, so I don't know the exact circumstances here.
Okay. Just before we go to the break news in a second, but this is from Mary, and I guess you could both have your sixpence on this. What's the market assessment of salary next year when VAT comes in? How much of an increase? I guess that's hopeful. There's a question mark there. I mean, are we likely to see anything there?
Honest answer, no.
No, probably not.
Because it's not the employer's fault the VAT's coming in. It's a fiscal decision the UAE government's taken, and it's the right thing. Controversial, I think it's the right thing for the government to do.
Okay, Stuart, thoughts on that?
Sorry, Stuart. Stuart's got a really nice green legal book here.
He thinks it's got all the answers.
He's not looking in it, though.
It's because they're all in his head.
Yeah, exactly.
As far as I know, none of our colleagues in the office have contemplated an increase in salary because of that, but yeah, maybe they'll spring it on us tomorrow. Who knows? Yeah,
okay.
No matter your preferred communication, stay in touch with Drive Live, only on Dubai Eye. 103.8.
On Drive Live Career Connect. Now.
Career Connect.
We have our two guests today, David McKenzie from McKenzie Jones and Stuart Walker from Freedy and Angel. Stuart, lots and lots of questions coming in for you. Legal perspective, I always like to say, from lots of people here. Let's start with this one. We were talking about this during the break there briefly. My wife got a job with a school locally. During the interview, they asked her, are you on your husband's visa? Does he have a housing allowance? She said yes. The school said then she was not eligible for housing. Her other colleagues get housing as they are single. And he's asking, is that allowed?
This is a contractual matter. The parties are free to agree what allowances they get and what they don't. If it's the policy of the school not to offer it, where the spouse is already collecting it, then that's a choice for the school. And if they miss out on good candidates because of that, that's their lookout.
Okay.
There's a question on a similar vein from Ali. He says, I need to change my employer's visa for my wife's sponsorship. However, her employer health insurance is better. Can I keep her health insurance? So what he's saying is, I'm sponsored by my employer, but I don't want to opt to take their lower health insurance. So can he still say on the wife's policy which is better?
Yeah, this is a new obligation with the requirement for employers to give health insurance, and it's throwing up difficult questions like this. I mean, we may see some clarification, but at the moment, it's your employer has to give you health insurance.
So if you're sponsored by somebody, the obligation
absolutely
is to offer health insurance, irrespective of...
What else they're getting elsewhere.
Okay. Yeah. Let's look at some of the other questions here that are coming in. This is an interesting one. This is not an HR issue. However, Wakil's texting in. Someone stole my checkbook from my car. Issued a check to another person. I reported the check as dishonored as the account was closed in 2011. Now the case has been referred to a forensic laboratory. Hopefully I will be able to get through this. Can I sue the person who accepted the forged check or the guy who stole the check? If Have you heard that before?
So he knows the guy that stole the check.
From what I can
see, shouldn't he report
him
to the police?
Well, I would have thought, but I mean, how would you go about suing? I don't even know really where
well,
to start.
Well, yeah, I mean, normally, I mean, there's a couple of things going on here. First of all, there's the criminal offence of bouncing a cheque, which we're all familiar
and
with.
The theft of the cheque, which was even out of date.
And the theft of the cheque.
Okay.
Normally, you wouldn't sue someone who had stolen something. You would just report them to the police.
I think.
But you do have a civil right. Yeah, if you've suffered loss, you could claim damages in the civil court. So technically, yes, you can.
He is saying he wants to sue them for the trouble that he had with the police and the courts. That's kind of what he wants to sue for.
Well, I noticed on the text it says it was 2011 checkbook. That was 6 years ago. Why has he got an out-of-date checkbook in his car?
I'm not sure.
It's amazing what you find in people's cars these days, I suppose.
Tic-tacs, apparently the most common thing in somebody's car.
Interesting that, because somebody left a pack in here earlier. Yeah. And they were delicious, it must be said. But this, they wrote a cheque to another person Z. Z reports the cheque is dishonoured, the account was closed in 2011. It then needs to go to forensic laboratory. I'm not sure. I mean, Wakil is also asking, because he's had trouble with the police, the courts, for obvious reasons, but how much could I sue him? I don't know if there's a figure you could put on that.
Well, you could claim damages in an amount equal to your loss. So how you go about proving the exact loss, documenting it, that's the difficult thing here. You can't just pick a number and say it's $1 million. The court would need to see evidence of how you got to that number. And documenting that is sometimes difficult.
Okay, we've got one more text in. No name on this one. They're saying, is it unreasonable to restrict an employee from working in all seven Emirates when they resign under labour law competition clauses, whether a limited or unlimited contract?
So these restraint of trade clauses, as they're known, have to be reasonable, and they can only cover what is necessary to protect the legitimate business interests of the company. So if they're not operating in all seven Emirates, then you wouldn't expect it to be that broad.
So it's worth asking the question whether that restriction is going to be enforced.
Yeah, and the further point, the more practical point, is that it's extremely difficult to enforce restraint of trade clauses in this country. Mm. So even if there is one, an employee may choose to disregard it.
Okay. Ali's got back in touch. Just to clarify, can I reject my employer? So Ali was the one who wants to stay on his wife's health insurance, even though he's got his own. He's saying, could I reject my employer's health insurance and remain on my wife's insurance if her employee if her employer provides a no objection certificate?
I don't think you can reject your employer's health insurance. I think you'd have to take both.
For clarity, Ali, I think there's no problem legally with him having both policies, and then if something happens and he wants to use the better policy, there's no legal problem with that at all.
There's no legal problem. It just seems it seems at the moment a slightly confused system and a bit wasteful to have two policies over the same risk.
But the insurers are loving it.
I bet they are, yeah.
Okay. Somebody observes that the gentleman with the checkbook, so somebody left a signed checkbook in their car. Jackpot was an observation. I don't know if it was signed.
And a six-year-old one.
How much of a jackpot really is that?
Hold on, how many times have you put a check in and you slightly got your signature wrong? In 6 years, I'm sure my signature changed. They wouldn't have accepted that check, would they?
I've had checks returned because my signature's off all the time. I don't sign any more checks. My wife signs them now because her signature, she's a teacher, she can write properly.
Consistent.
I write like a GP, so. No, I've had, in the last 6 years, three checks have come back saying we don't know who this person is.
Yeah.
I think it's almost the same, but it's true, isn't it? It's, it happens. Your signature changes ever so slightly. Mm. But at least you know the bank are doing their job. There's somebody there checking, which is always a good thing. I was trying to take the moral high ground, as you well
know.
I know
you were.
Let's get back to our topic today. How realistic is your job search? I want to come back to this because a couple of articles that you sent, David, understanding if you're looking for an appropriate job at the right level is key. So the first point in this article, the first line in this article, is make sure you're going for the thing that's right for you. And it is, again, realism and honesty and going for the right
thing. Yeah, I think, look, you know what you're good at, and I think we've had this discussion a number of times on this, is that if you're a sales manager and you're going for a senior sales manager role, that's the right thing to do. If you're a sales manager at the moment, you're going for an HR manager's role. In this market, you're unlikely to get it unless you have the key skills the client needs.
Mm. I have a friend who's just moved to Dubai and he's looking for work, a family member actually, and he said the other day, he says, well, you know, I'm just gonna apply for everything. And I bit my lip because I heard your words echoing in my brain. And I don't want to be negative, the shotgun approach. So, you know, that's very clear. The other thing is this, and I'd like a really honest opinion on this, and your thoughts on this as well, Stuart. If you get to the end of the job interview and the recruiter or the interviewer says, so what starting salary are you looking for? You're talking about realism here.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you automatically shoot a little bit higher, or... What's the right way to handle that?
A very tricky thing to do. Now, the article's brilliant. Can I read that bit? I think it's just very amusing. I'll pray-see this, basically.
It's well worth doing it.
An interviewer asks an interviewee, you know, what sort of salary are you looking for? And the person says, in the region of $100,000, depending on the benefits package. The interviewer says, great, you'll get also 5 weeks vacation, 14 days holiday, full medical, and a red Corvette. And the job hunter says, great, wow, are you kidding? The interviewer says, yes, but you started it. So I think you, throughout the process, typically interviews take three stages. During that process, they will have asked you what you're currently earning. Now, there's a big trend for employers now to ask for pay slips to prove what you've been earning, because so many people don't. So be very careful when you go into a job interview and they say, what are you earning? Do not lie, because they could at the end of the process go, right, we're going to make you an offer. By the way, these are the paperwork we need. It's just paperwork. Your salary certificates, proof of your earnings, and etc. And you could lose the interview for that or the job.
I mean, as you know, Tim,
we've had this discussion.
I don't think it's a fair question to ask. And I think people are missing out by answering the question. Obviously, I'm not an HR expert, so maybe listen
to the
professional.
But no, but Natalie, I think you're right. But you have to, a degree, you're going to work for this employer. To a degree, you have to trust that they're not going to completely lower your salary. Because when you go for the job, you'll know roughly what the salary is. So if they come in and offer you 40% less, you're not going to take it. Remember, you're the person with a position of power there. Now, if you love the job, say, well, I'm on 20,000 dirhams, and the person says, right, okay, the job's only paying, you know, 21, you can say, look, okay, I'll take 21 now, but can you give me a review in 3 months, and can you write into the contract that if I hit certain KPIs or objectives, it goes up to 24? That's a very reasonable thing to ask for on this market, and it shows you're committing to that company as well.
Don't all employers expect candidates to say, I want a bit more money? I mean, how important is a bit of honour in this day and age? Stuart?
Very important. More important every day.
That's a lawyer.
It's good to hear. No, but I mean, but it is, it's very much standard, isn't it? That employers would expect you to shoot for the moon, and do you have an obligation to yourself to do that?
And some advice I once gave to my younger brother when he was starting his sort of career was that, you know, if... going into a job interview, ask for an elephant, and you know, maybe you'll get a mouse, but ask for the bigger elephant to start with.
I think if you ask for too much and you're unrealistic, it makes the employer go, maybe, you know, they're not as realistic as I think they are.
There's an element of gauging the interview as well,
but
isn't
this
there?
This is
gauging
the
interviewer.
Yeah. Do you remember there's a great, I'm sorry, I'm going to digress again, there's a great film called War Dogs. Have you seen this, where with Jonah Hill in it? And they go in to bid for this contract for guns for the US Army, and they go into this panel and they bid for it, and they get, and it's like they bid 600 million. And the guy goes, right, you've got it. And he goes, why? So the closest bid was a billion. and the reason is they didn't ask the question. They didn't ask the, at the beginning, they didn't ask the recruiter, or they didn't ask at the first stage of the process, what is this paying? Because if you go into a job, you're a salesperson and you're going for a senior salesperson, you roughly know what the salary is. But ask, don't be afraid to ask that in an interview. What is this role paying? Mm. And if they go, well, what are you looking for? Well, I'm on 22 at the moment. I'd like 26. These are the reasons why. And if they go, actually, it's only paying 24, you know where you're at.
Okay, so being upfront about money is...
Don't be embarrassed
by
money. We're Dubai. Come on, look, we've got the biggest building in the world, and, you know, we're fairly outlandish, and one of the things that people are, they're very straightforward to a degree here.
Okay. So be realistic. That's what we're talking about today when you're looking for work.
We want to hear from you. Find us on Facebook. Tweet at DubaiEye1038FM.
The last 10 minutes of Career Connect with our two guests.
Career Connect.
David McKenzie and Stuart Walker. Stuart, I'm going to come straight to a question or observation here. We've been mulling this one over as well. My wife's on my company's health insurance. Though she's under her company visa, she said she didn't want health insurance from her employer. They were okay with that. The law is, this person's saying, everyone should have health insurance, not necessarily that your employer should provide it, which I'm not sure is correct.
I don't think that's correct either.
Right.
And I mean, maybe the law should say that. It just doesn't say that at the moment. It may be the sort of thing that gets clarified in the future. But unfortunately, companies have to provide insurance for all their employees.
So your sponsor, it is incumbent on your sponsor to provide you with medical insurance.
And there's nothing in the law that says unless you've got it from somewhere else and then you choose.
Okay.
That it just doesn't say that at the moment.
Okay. So you could see that as a benefit in one side, and the other side it's wasteful because somebody may have two policies. And that's simply how it is at the moment. Until clarification comes.
It's wasteful, isn't it?
Hmm.
Okay.
Hmm.
But I mean, you could see it that way.
For a company, it's very wasteful. Yeah, you're having to double bubble almost, aren't you?
Hmm.
And some companies cover dependents, so on two, there could be several people, including partner, children, that are covered twice.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's just a message in here, and he says, I've taken a 50% pay cut to join a global hospitality brand because it gives me a proper long-term career opportunity and security, which I place a huge value on, especially as we are in the UAE. I've lost two jobs before through bad luck. So that's kind of what we're talking about. It's the overall package, not just the salary, that makes the difference.
I think there's two things with him there. One is obviously the poor chap or lady has been made redundant twice. But he's taken a very long-term view. I mean, 50% is a big pay cut. I mean, I don't think most people would do that, but good on him for seeing a long-term future with an employer.
He's being a realist.
Aren't we all, Natalie?
Yes, I like it.
Should we carry on our conversation later?
Oh, this is getting creepy in this room.
No,
now.
It's just we do butt heads on this every time about privacy and about and I understand where Natalie's coming from, but I'm a real believer. I'm an honourable person, so I think if a company tries to give you a lower salary than you deserve, and you know, you shouldn't take that job.
But if they don't give you that information in the first instance, how do you know that it's not the right level? There's a text in from Mark, who obviously is very smart and very real about things. Mark says, my current salary is private and the new company does not have the right to ask. The new company must pay for the position and associated responsibility that goes with it. And I guess what you're saying is, yes, but if you know it's worth this and you tell them and they want to pay you less, but you have to be aware of the information. If you're not aware of that information and they're asking you your salary and they're not prepared to disclose what they were paying the person that did the job before you.
No, I think your point's actually right here, Natalie. I think the reality is, as an employer, you have an obligation to make sure that the job is at the right salary level, irrespective of the person's current salary. I understand that, but the fact when you go through the process of interviewing, you as the candidate should know what the salary is paying for that role. Because if you go into an interview and you get to the third interview stage and you go, oh, actually it's paying 20,000, you're expecting 40, then you've done something wrong during that process. You haven't asked the right questions, or the HR haven't obviously offered those things. But it doesn't happen that often. I've got to be honest with you, it's very rare where Natalie's looking at me. It's happened to me once, Natalie, and I'll give you a very short story. It was in a different part of the GCC where I had a candidate who was on 100,000 dirhams or whatever the currency was, and we got the offer at the end, and it was 50% less. And I went to the client, why are you doing that? He said, well, this is what the position pays. And I said, you should have told me that up front. And the client said to me, you should have asked.
Mm.
I'm a recruiter. That was my obligation, and I didn't ask. So my fault.
Okay, so realism is one thing, but doing your research is another thing. You're just getting that kind of...
She's going to switch my mic off in a minute.
Glower. No, she doesn't have that power. But in fact, I better acquiesce that power in Natalie's direction.
Yes.
Okay, so being realistic then, let's get back to that for a moment. Mm. If you do have a question for either of our guests, by the way, do text it 4001, or you can use the free app, or indeed call 423 1010. Compensation, are you asking too much or too little? I think we've pretty much done that, really. Yeah. We've gone past that conversation. One other thing, when you are putting forward the skills that you have on your CV, highlighting the most recent or the skills that you're most proud of, the skills that you worked for Microsoft back in 1990, how much would you highlight that kind of thing?
Only if it's relevant to the job. But there's no point, you know, I talk about my sporting prowess when I was a great rugby player, but that was 20 years ago. So there's no point in me telling people now because they look at me and go, nah. So the reality is, I think if you have a job and you're going for an HR manager job and you start talking about the HR administration you did 10 years ago, it probably isn't relevant to the job you're going for. So look at what they're asking and listen to what they're asking for.
So if it shows a real progression, the fact that you 25 years ago you worked for X and they're well regarded, then perhaps include that. But you've got to be realistic and think, well, look, they're really going to be interested in my last, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
7 years?
Yeah.
Is that how?
Absolutely. The worst thing candidates do when typically an interviewer, to warm an interview process up, they go, tell me about your career. And they go, back in 74... the Cuban Missile Crisis, whatever. You know, they literally go so far back, when actually what you've got to do is look at your, and actually clarify that with an interview and say, well, which bit do you want me to start with? Oh, okay, what I'd like to do. You've got to ask questions, but your most relevant experience is probably your last 5 years. And if they want to go back further, let them ask those questions.
But, I mean, when I look at CVs, it's always a red flag if there's any gaps in employment history.
Yeah.
We like to see
continuity.
Continuity, absolutely.
And you know what? The Middle East is very bad for filling in gaps where those gaps should be, if that makes sense. So we do a lot of checks on whether people have worked for the time they've said in those companies. And just beware, candidates out there, this is a message to you all, do not lie on your CV. Employers are very sharp now. They will ask for your pay slips. Natalie's shaking her head. They'll ask for your degree certificates from registered proper universities, and they will check them.
So if you've had, you've been out of work for 6 months, it's a tough time. Lots of people are having issues. The best thing is to say, I've been looking for work for 6 months, I've had no luck. That you just...
Absolutely. But say what you've been doing. And I mean, what you're finding a lot of, and I speak to candidates on a daily basis, and I feel so sorry for these guys. There's some super good people out there that have been made redundant or can't get work for various reasons. And what they've done, they've gone into their friends' companies or they've gone and helped people, have done pro bono stuff. Talk about the stuff you've been doing for the last 6 months, but don't lie about it, because you can't say you've been doing something because people will check up.
Mm. There is a text in, no name on this. They say, when you do a job which is less than your qualification, like you've suggested, if times are tough, you do a different job. Would it hamper your chances in the future of getting hired to a job appropriate to your qualification level?
That's an interesting one. Sometimes it does, yes. What you have to do is look at what you are good at and look at what you can do. The gentleman that got a 50% pay increase, I would never advise that to somebody, because that's going very far back in terms of your actual pay. So trying to get back up there again, it could be quite difficult. But I think if you take a step sideways, and it's a more realistic one where you've got the right career path going forwards, it should be relatively easy to get back on there. Just remember, when we all first came here, people were moving for, you know, getting massive pay increases and massive career increases as well.
Let's end on a positive note today. Said, I lost my job in January, and when I met my current employer, I told them I'm okay joining for 20% less than my last salary. My employer said, we're going to pay you 20% more than your last salary. So, Said saying, I joined with a positive mindset, didn't have to compromise on living standards. All, you know, all's well that ends well.
Good for him. That's Natalie's looking at me again. I think that's really good, because I think he's been very realistic. What you've got to do, employers are not having a nice time now, by the way. So we're talking about candidates. We are having a terrible time because people aren't paying, and it's quite tough. So when I get employees coming to me saying, look, I know it's difficult now. We talked about a pay review. I'll take a bit of a break on that one. We never let that happen because we've promised them. But I really like that attitude, because it shows that they're engaged with my company and they believe in what we're trying to do. And I think that's the same for most companies.
Well, you see that in that text, don't you? Whenever somebody mentions the idea of a positive mindset, generally they are of that mindset.
Dubai is a positive country, isn't it? Everything we do here is about, you know, positivity, about the expo and about... So I think there are some really good people here. The bit I'm very concerned about in this market it is getting better, but it's getting better very slowly, and there are less and less roles out there. So people have to be more pragmatic. And to end on that note, you just have to be more realistic.
It's a good way to finish, I think. We've still got texts coming in, so we're going to try and answer a couple of those now. Thank you for texting. Stuart Walker from Freedy and Angel, partner at the firm. Nice to see you. Thank you.
Good
for
to see
your
you
time
again.
Today, yep. Stuart. And thank also you. David McKenzie, Managing Director at McKenzie Jones. The Rise of the Realist is a blog appearing on our website near you, Seb. Is that right?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me as well.
Good to see you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.